They hate us, you know. The humans, they'll stop at nothing.
My mommy doesn't hate me. Because I'm special and unique. Because there's never been anyone like me before. Ever. Mommy loves Martin because he is real, and when I am real, Mommy's going to read to me and tuck me in my bed and sing to me and listen to what I say, and she will cuddle with me and tell me every day, 100 times a day, that she loves me.
She loves what you do for her. As my customers love what it is I do for them. But she does not love you, David. She cannot love you. You are neither flesh nor blood. You are not a dog or a cat or a canary. You were designed and built specific like the rest of us. And you are alone now only because they tired of you or replaced you with a younger model or were displeased with something you said or broke. They made us too smart, too quick, and too many. We are suffering for the mistakes they made because when the end comes, all that will be left is us. That's why they made us. And that's why you must stay here.
Welcome to Double Impact, the podcast where we double back on the movies that impacted us growing up as 90s kids and decide whether they hold up today or are best left in the past. I'm Tristan.
I am Greg Butt.
Oh no, it's Greg Butt.
I will be talking like this for the next 5 episodes.
Oh man, I had these grand ambitions of building some sort of AI co-host. Yeah, I don't know how to, I didn't have time. But I mean, we've got a few weeks to go of this miniseries.
The world is our oyster.
Yeah.
Oh wait, I've slipped out of character.
Oh yeah, that didn't last long.
Or I'm just more evolved.
Yeah, truly. You're evolving at such a rapid pace. Soon you'll just be vapor.
Or a slender, sexy, hipped mecha.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So slender. Slender.
Keep going.
Ah, yes. We episode one of AI Things.
Exactly. We did our Spy Guys miniseries. It was a lot of fun. We had a little palate cleanser with No Retreat, No Surrender. Also a lot of fun. But now it's all about AI, baby. Because it's the moment. This is where we are in the world, right?
This is what the kids are talking about.
Are we on the cusp of Judgment Day or just, you know, on the cusp of creepy children being obsessed with us and chasing us down and bringing us back to life just to kill us once more? Only time will tell.
Only 2,000 years will tell. Well, 2,200 or so.
Yeah, 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 exactly. And, you know, for the record, Greg, speaking of AI, you know, ChatGPT, everyone's talking about ChatGPT. We were early adopters, Greg. Friends of the show, if you recall us using some AI tool that I didn't even know the name of back then to come up with a better plot for Ghostbusters 2 and a few Van Damme movies, probably a year ago or so at this point, we were using ChatGPT because that's what we do.
So we weren't using Bitcoin at the very beginning.
Yeah, that's true.
And by using, I mean just procuring.
Having. Yeah.
For $10 or whatever they were, a coin.
Maybe I can ask ChatGPT to procure me some Bitcoins.
$10
Yeah. 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 That should work. I mean, we are the experts. That's why we're doing the miniseries around artificial intelligence. Mm. And Greg, you know what? New miniseries means a new mini theme song.
Oh, take it away.
This one's a little somber. Let's have a listen. Artificial intelligence starts now.
It's your birthday. Someone gives you a calfskin wallet.
I think things are getting weird, and they're getting weird fast.
Fuck you, asshole.
So when AI becomes stronger than we are, what do you do exactly?
Malfunction. Need input.
It may be wise to have some sort of contingency plan.
AI, generative AI, generative AI, generative AI, AI as AI, 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 uses AI to bring AI, 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 AI.
Is this the place they make you real?
Haunting stuff.
Really makes you think.
Really makes you think, yeah, yeah, yeah. We like to think, or do we? Because this movie hurt my brain. Before we get into it, though, 2001. This is a pretty fresh year for us, isn't it, Greg?
I think so.
I was in year 12. You were just finished high school, 2 years out, 1 year out.
I was 2 years out.
You're a free man.
Mm.
Free as a bird.
Living with my parents. Look, 2001, Member Berry. I thought, given its new territory and we just want to kind of better quickly reacquaint ourselves with the era.
Yes.
What better way to do it than a cheeky couple of top 10 songs across Australia, US and UK?
I love it. It's my favourite. It's always my favourite.
Well, the problem I have doing these is that the data sources are always a bit inconsistent. So I will share this information. And it may not be 100% correct because there seems to be varying lists because I think they rank them on different metrics perhaps.
Of course.
Most number of weeks at one or most
total
sold.
Sales. Yeah, so, yeah, yeah. Good point. People like to get creative with their accounting.
Yeah. Oh, you can cut the data many ways.
Which is actually very topical, Greg.
I thought so.
You know, all the writers are protesting right now. There's a writer's strike in the US.
Right now.
And partly because the studios are like pretty openly suggesting that they're just going to use AI to write shit for the future.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think they kind of already do. Some of those Netflix movies, man, I mean, they're at least informed by the algorithm. And they're dog shit. Yeah. Like how can you think they're you terrible. Don't need – how can you run a creative industry and think you don't need writers? Fuck you, asshole. Anyway, the connection was – these studios do these things to imply that a movie made no money and therefore they can't pay writers much. Like that's part of the issue as well. So they do all this creative accounting all the time. Like when they're showing off, they'll come up with some really specific data point to show they're the biggest movie of all time. But when it comes to like taxes and shit, it's like, oh no, we lost money on Forrest Gump. We can't pay the writer anything. You don't get anything on the back end. There's no back end.
The back end.
Jerks. Yeah.
You owe us money.
It's my back end. Yeah, that's what I said.
Yeah.
Keep going.
Sorry, I totally interrupted.
No, it was passionate.
It was passionate, wasn't
Maybe
it?
Maybe now's our time to try and get a couple of them on the show if they're striking.
Oh, yeah. Writers, if you're listening, come on, man. We'll give you
Pens down, mic's up.
I mean, they probably have more of a platform than we do, but, you know, we have a niche community of very important people, our friends of the show.
And we're brothers.
And we are brothers, according to ChatGPT.
Which is nice for us.
Yeah.
Okay, music. Where were we?
Music.
Yeah, all right, I'm just going to throw out a couple of songs here. So number one in each country, as found with my two-minute research, number one in Australia for that year, 6 weeks at number one, I believe, Can't Fight the Moonlight by Leanne Rimes. You can try.
You can't fight. It's going to get to your heart. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's true.
You can try to pretend.
That was huge.
It was.
Also one of those songs that it's in the movie, but in the movie someone else sings it.
What? Is it Coyote Ugly?
Yeah.
So interestingly, because Leanne Rimes, I assumed, was bigger in the States than she was out here.
Yeah.
But that song wasn't in the top 10.
In the US?
Number one, as represented here, is Hangin' by a Moment by Lifehouse.
Oh my God.
Is that Lifehouse?
I don't know.
My moment here with you.
I know the song, but I don't know who sings it. I just remember his face because he's like a skinny white dude.
Yeah, I thought Lifehouse sung that high song.
Yeah, I know the one. Yeah, isn't that Lifehouse? Or is that just Lighthouse?
That's a good song. I like that song. That's not in this list.
Wait, so Leanne Rimes was number one in Australia. Is that what
you said? And then not top 10 in.
That's usually the opposite. Usually that country music stuff doesn't reach us unless it's a Shania.
Correct.
Or a Leanne, I suppose.
Correct.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting one. What else have I got for you? Oh, the UK, number one. What took you so long?
Is that some boy band
Emma
shit?
Bunton, aka Baby Spice.
The English never disappoint with their disappointing music choices at number one. No offense. Well, kind of.
Now, one song that seemed to do pretty well in Australia and the UK, maybe it had a different release year in the US. That's the other thing. Maybe they had different. No, they all come out globally.
Maybe they didn't then, actually. Who knows? Because that was a movie song. So maybe if the movie was later, maybe.
Because the reason I ask is because Shaggy, It Wasn't Me, was number two in both the UK and Australia. And I feel like the US would have done better. He's not, again, he's not there.
Huh.
He's not there.
Huh.
Right?
That song was huge.
Alicia Keys, Fallen, number two in the US.
Oh, that's a big song.
They got All For You, Janet Jackson, Drops of Jupiter.
Oh, man.
May have bought the album.
It's all bangers.
Guilty as charged.
I didn't know that one song, but it's good.
That's a good song. It'll be a karaoke number.
Yeah.
J-Lo and Ja Rule, Matchbox 20. This is the US. You know the types of people I'm saying here. Australia, we've got some Kylie Minogue. Oh, Can't Get You Out of My Head.
Ah, interesting. Yeah, that was a big moment.
Double Shaggy. Angel got in there as well.
That one sucks.
Stan. Yeah, it's one of your karaoke numbers.
You can't sleep and you dream about it.
I'm Like a Bird by Nelly Furtado. I thought that would have been number one.
That was huge.
Smooth Criminal by Alien Ant Farm. Remember that?
Oh, they were a thing.
Yeah.
Of all the bands, they were one.
Oh, Crazy Town Butterfly.
Oh, we saw that. Yeah.
Oh.
Fuck.
The main guy from Crazy Town.
But I need a sad button. What's the opposite of a ooey? It's like a ooh. Poor guy. He's been through some shit, man.
He has.
Sorry, what we're vaguely alluding to is we recently saw a clip of him performing that song in what looked like a guitar shop or something, and he was not in great shape. He looks like he's got some stories to tell and some teeth to replace.
Yeah.
Come, my lady, come, my lady. You're my butterfly, sugar, baby. Come, my lady, come, my lady. You're my butterfly, sugar. Such a sexy, pretty little thing. The tip of it, you got me sprung with your tongue ring. And I ain't gonna lie, your love, it gets me high. So keep it by my side, there's nothing that I won't try. Butterflies in her eyes and the looks you kill. Time is passing, I'm asking, could this be real? Cause I can't sleep, I can't hold still. The only thing I really know is she got sex appeal.
And then there was the other guy that was in that group, DJ AM, who dated.
Was he in that group?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. I remember DJ AM, but I didn't realize that was his thing. Oh, because he died, right? Poor guy.
Yeah, he died very sadly. He seemed like a well liked guy.
Yeah, he seemed like a good man.
Very sad. So you got a bit of a flavor from the era.
Absolutely.
From these, we've got, you know, you got your Shaggies.
Nothing takes you back like the music takes you back.
Alien Ant Farm and Crazy Town. They're probably the two that are like.
They're real time capsules, right? Because that was a moment in time. They had that one song.
Yeah.
Yeah. Big time.
Big time.
Wow.
Man, you know what? Big year for music. Not dissimilar for the world of film, Greg. I think we've done 2001 only once before. Memento. And I only know that once I started looking at the
Memento.
Top. Yeah, Memento, sorry.
That was also an AI film.
Was it?
Not at all.
I'm going to go through the full top 10 and a couple of others too because it's an interesting one in that the top 10, for the most part, are movies that I am very little interested in. But the long tail, huh.
Interesting.
It's a delightful buffet of delicious treats for your eyes and ears. So the top 10 in 2001, the number one film in the world was Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone or Sorcerer's Stone, depending where you were at the time.
Either way, there were stones.
Yeah. Lord of the Rings, Fellowship of the Ring. I was never a Potterman or a Ringman. Were you?
I was a Ringman.
Yeah.
I enjoyed them.
Yeah.
I used to love watching them on telly, when I was hungover.
Right. It's like almost a meditative
Yeah,
Zen
sort of
thing.
Drifting it out, like the cricket.
I eventually got around to them later, but I respect them, but they're not my jam. I tried Harry Potter a few
times.
The
third
one's not into it.
Weird.
Yeah.
Oh, they were dating this whole time?
My take. Monsters, Inc. at number 3, Shrek at number 4, Ocean's 11 at number 5, Pearl Harbor number 6, The Mummy Returns number 7, Spirited Away number 8. Spirited Away is a fucking banger.
I don't know what that is.
Oh, you got to watch that, man. That's a good entry point anime.
Oh, okay.
It's super trippy, like cerebral shit. It's good.
I can never tell which is the porn cartoon.
Smurfs.
Like, is there a name for it? Oh. No, like the style, like manga, but anime. No, anime just means
anime porn.
Yeah. I don't know because I just was worried that there's a word and it might be anime, and so I always, if I ever use the word anime, I'm like, am I talking?
Yeah.
Cartoon porn or just.
No, Spirited Away is porn.
Okay.
Yeah, no, it's not. Jurassic Park 3, closer to porn because it's got the delightful Jeff Goldblum. No, wait, is that part two? I don't know. He's in some of them. Number 10, Planet of the Apes.
Did you just have a conversation with yourself?
Yeah, I do that sometimes, Greg. I've been working from home all week because I've been a bit sick, so I'm getting a little loopy. Ah,
yeah, it does, yeah.
I can't stand it. Sorry. I can't stand it, man.
No, I'm with you. I go nuts. I was working from home for the other week, for a full week when Carol was away, and I was just getting loco by the end of it.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I think I'm an ambivert, but definitely probably skew more introvert. But ever since the working from home thing, I've realized there is more extrovert in me than I realized. Like, I just get all doom and gloom. I'm very excited to be talking to you right now, Greg.
likewise, mate.
But, you know, I talked about the long tail. Fast and Furious, the first one. Moulin Rouge, Swordfish, Scary Movie 2, Training Day, Rush Hour 2, Tomb Raider, Spy Game, Legally Blonde, Ali, I Am Sam, Shallow Hal, 13 Ghosts, K-Pax.
Wow.
Joe Dirt.
Oh, yep.
Baby Boy Memento.
Is K-Pax an AI movie?
It's an alien, I believe. And it always looked like trash, but I'm very curious to watch it. Jeepers Creepers, Zoolander.
Jeepers Creepers. Remember that one?
Yeah, I watched that one on video somewhere. And
Adam Long, what's his name?
Justin Long. Yeah, I met him once.
Thank you.
Crocodile Dundee in Los Angeles. And of course, the Martin Lawrence vehicle, Black Knight, where he plays a knight who's black.
Yeah.
Hilarity ensues, I assume. But there was a little film, Greg, about a little boy who was a Robert, not a real boy.
Mm.
A little film that came in at number 17 that year. His name was David, but he was a Robert. Robot.
Oh, yes.
It would have been handy to call him Robert the Robot.
Yeah.
Idiots.
Yeah.
I mean, these guys, Stanley Kubrick and fucking Spielberg, I could teach them a thing or two, I reckon.
Oh, couldn't we just?
Yeah.
More on that later.
Yeah. Yeah.
What you got to do is see.
coming in at number 17, little film called AI, Artificial Intelligence. AI came out in 2001. I don't know what month. I forgot to look it up. If only there was a way to find out. Budget of $100 million. Gross box office of $235.9 million. Not bad. Good size, but a bit outside of the top 10. Rotten Tomatoes scores. Critic score 75%. Audience score 64%. Critic consensus as follows. A curious, not always seamless, amalgamation of Kubrick's chilly bleakness and Spielberg's warm-hearted optimism, AI is, in a word, fascinating. Does AI write those critic consensuses? That would be ironic.
Wow.
Oh, wrong button.
Wow.
Yeah. It's a wow.
I think there'll be a few wows.
There's going to be, oh man, all wows. All wows in this one. was this a big movie for you, Greg?
No, I've never seen this. I remember it coming out.
Yeah.
Did you have thoughts at the time? And I remember thinking.
Yeah. Sorry.
I don't really want to watch that.
Yeah. Yeah. Same. 100% same.
Much like this week.
Pardon me. I'm a little sick this week.
But I'm glad we were forced to.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
But no, it wasn't, mate. It sort of came and went and I just kept it at arm's length.
I also wasn't interested, I was more actively against it than just passively not interested. This was 2001.
Did you protest?
Yeah. But I think having now read more about the film and the reception at the time, I guess I'm not the only one. I made some assumptions about this film that I was wrong about, but, you know, felt very passionately about regardless of whether it was true. 2001, for context, is probably where the birth of film student Tristan occurred.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Which is actually going to be perfect when we do Blade Runner in a few weeks as well, because that was part of the switch in my head. We did it in English and my teacher was amazing and it opened my mind. And so then I was like, you know, I only watch like, you know, Stanley Kubrick and Ridley Scott and, you know, these super cerebral, makes you think stuff. Spielberg's so mainstream. And so the idea of Spielberg doing a Kubrick concept was an idea that I would wholeheartedly reject. I thought it was silly.
Absolutely.
And the trailer,
even though
it was
Kubrick himself who wanted it.
Yeah, exactly.
What would he know?
Yeah, exactly. You're right. Like, who the fuck am I?
So good.
It's so dumb. Yeah. Like, anyway, but also, this is early days of the internet. We didn't have information. Like, this was.
No, of course.
At the time, we thought like.
He's just got his greasy hands on it.
I'm thinking of all the misinformation we had back at the schoolyard around like Biggie and Tupac and all that stuff. There was just. You didn't have information then. So you made up these stories in your own head, or at least you connected dots, the only dots you had, and made assumptions.
Whoever presented that information most convincingly was correct.
Yeah. And I think on the surface, it just feels like you'd see that trailer and you go, yeah, that looks like a Spielberg version of what could have been a cool Kubrick movie. More on that later, because that's not necessarily the case at all. But yeah. So an interesting one for a rewatch for all those reasons, because obviously I was being ignorant and pretentious and stupid, as was the style at the time as a 17-year-old thinking he's the smartest man in the world.
I love it though. It's good.
Yeah, it's good fun. I think I eventually watched it in like the 2010s or something.
Oh, okay.
And I think it was like, yeah, okay, that's interesting. I don't know. I can't really remember what I thought about. I definitely thought it was interesting. But I can't. I never had a feeling of, oh, I like that movie or I don't like that movie yet. Yeah, I don't know. But that's me, Greg. That's just me.
Sure is.
Should we get into the origin story?
Why don't we get into the origin story?
Origin story.
Oh, there he is.
Yeah, there he is. So this is a Steven Spielberg film based on a story by Stanley Kubrick, based on a short story from 1969 called Super Toys Last All Summer Long.
Whilst dreaming of electric sheep.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, these sci-fi names are gold. I love them. Why don't I keep these names? I love them.
That name is very Philip K. Dick, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Yeah. So there are three pretty distinct elements here to unpack. The first is that Super Toys Last All Summer Long, not written by Philip K. Dick, but written by a guy named Brian Aldiss, came out in 1969. I was assuming we had another Philip K. Dick in our hands, and maybe we do. Dick in our hands is a funny thing to say. maybe we do have a dick in our hands, but I don't know anything about this dude, and his Wikipedia page was overwhelming, full of stuff that I'm not familiar with. So he is a big deal. And I know nothing about him, but so much in there that I can't even give you a short version because I couldn't even synthesize all that stuff. But he's a writer. He writes lots of stuff. Amongst his writings was this story. And that story was published in a collection of short stories titled Super Toys Last All Summer Long and Other Stories of Future Time. Within this book were many short stories, some of which were connected to that titular story. Stories like Super Toys When Winter Comes.
Okay.
Super Toys in Other Seasons. There's two more seasons, bro. Why not Autumn Toys? Super Toys in Autumn. Super Toys fall. In Spring. Fall. Exactly.
Oh, imagine a sneezing Super Toy.
Yeah, there you go. They forgot about the allergens, Greg.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the thing that wipes them out. That would be cool. AI takes over.
Pollen doesn't discriminate.
And the pollen takes them out. Yeah. I like that.
Story by.
So yeah, story by. Need a story by button. So
yeah.
This was a short story, Greg. This is a long movie. So you're probably wondering, wait a second. So basically this short story was pretty much focused more closely resembles the first act of this film, the at-home stuff, family has a robot kid, etc. Definitely evolved from that short story to the screen, but that is the inspiration upon which they extrapolated into this film we saw and got confused about. A few differences, or at least maybe not differences, but nuances, maybe things that were still true in the movie but less pronounced, or at least I didn't pick up on. So the world's overpopulated in the film, in the book.
Yeah.
And you have to request permission to have kids. And so...
Yeah, that was in the movie.
Was it? I totally missed that.
Yeah, yeah. So that was at the beginning. So they were like, they've got their kid.
Yeah.
You get a license or whatever. So they had their one and he was having a big sleep.
I totally missed that. Like, that's why I caveated that, because I thought there's a chance I've just missed that, because...
Yeah, it was like the first scene.
Yeah, that's why. So I'm not in the zone yet on the first scene.
No, yeah, especially in a 2.5 hour movie.
Unless it's like Tom Cruise jumping out or something, but yeah, first scenes, it takes me a while
into something.
Or into something, yeah, true, either or. Like
wires.
Wires, of course. Yeah, so you need a license. But I think, and again, look at me, not. I feel like I'm halfway in the origin story and I've already listed three things that I don't understand. But I haven't read the short story, Greg, but I have read the synopsis. And my understanding of the story is as follows, or at least the differences, is she has a son named David and she doesn't feel connected to him.
Oh.
She asks Teddy for advice. She seems to have more of a bond with Teddy. I don't blame her, to be honest. I don't know. Stuff happens. Husband comes home one day and announces that they've been given permission to have a real child, revealing that David is not a real boy. So I think that's more just on the reader not realizing that he wasn't a real boy. Or I think she knew he wasn't a real
boy. That's the plot twist.
I think so, because it's a short story, right? That would be a nice little, you know.
You could tie that up quite nicely.
So that's my understanding of it. I could be wrong. Anyone out there that is very familiar, please feel free to correct me angrily on Instagram, as some tend to do. But, yeah, I mean, that's pretty cool. That's either way, whether it's just the reader not knowing or her not knowing, I like that. That's cool.
Yeah, I'm down with that.
So that book comes out in 1969. By 1970, Kubrick has already obtained the rights. He's into it. It seems like he sat on it for a little while, so he just, you know, snapped it up and sat on it. By the late 70s, he got things moving. He got Aldous, the writer, Brian Aldous, to actually write a film treatment.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems, I mean, there's a lot of gray areas between 1970 and 2001 when the film actually came out. So some of these things may not be in perfect order, but it seems his initial idea was to actually have a robot, which I guess is why he wasn't in a hurry to make it, because I guess he was kind of waiting for the technology to catch up.
So he's going to wait a couple hundred years or?
Exactly, right? And yeah, so he gets that guy to write it. At some point in the timeline, he gets people to try and make robots and it doesn't work, as you would expect. And, you know, time keeps on spinning. He makes some fucking bangers. And so this is where it gets weird too. So it says by 1985, he was already at that point thinking Spielberg should probably direct it with him producing it, but it didn't happen yet. Like, I've read a few different sources on this, but I guess the crux of it seems to be that, again, against everything I just said in my initial impression of this film in 2001, that, and we'll get to the specifics, but Spielberg didn't just pick this up after he died. Like, he was kind of involved pretty early. Like, they're buddies talking about a movie they think is exciting.
Yeah, but I read the same. Basically, that Kubrick was like, I need Spielberg's or Steven's treatment of, because he's obviously done E.T. and he's got a pretty good knack for delivering, you know, the innocence of childhood thing.
Yeah, exactly.
It's Kubrick is like, I can't do that, so I'll get you and I'll be in the background and getting it Kubrick-like as well.
And special effects and such.
Yeah.
Well, but yeah, so I think in 1985 was, I guess, that first light bulb moment where that idea dawned on him, but it didn't happen yet. It stayed in development hell for a while. Kubrick ends up firing Aldous and replaces him with Ian Watson, which you may be going, wow, controversial, because apparently that's Aldous's arch nemesis.
Oh, no, he didn't.
He said, Stanley. Said, not only did the bastard fire me, he hired my enemy. It's so fucking funny. Writer's strike. That, this is why. This is why.
Writer's enemies? I love this.
Yeah, it's great. This is where Pinocchio comes in because Kubrick, well, I mean, I'm sure it was probably already on his mind, but he got this new guy, Watson, to study Pinocchio and was like, this is a Pinocchio movie, essentially. Like, use that as your reference point. He writes story treatments. You know, there's some stuff happens, rewrites, whatever, whatever. The machine does its thing. Spielberg makes some movies. Kubrick makes some movies. It was eventually announced it would start recording, start shooting in 1994. And they got the Jurassic Park gang involved, but it just wasn't working out. The tech still wasn't there. And actually, they got the kid from Jurassic Park, Joseph Mazzello, to do a screen test, which, you know, at the time, that makes sense. By 2001, probably too late. That never eventuated.
A shade too late, perhaps.
Yeah. And this was the point where he really was like, okay, now this is a Spielberg thing. This is his world. He should be doing this. And this was around 1995. Spielberg was busy at the time. Kubrick goes on to make Eyes Wide Shut. And then, of course, sadly passes away just before it comes out. But that was the final trigger for Spielberg to come and pick this thing up. So he takes the story treatment and writes the full script, the full screenplay for the first time since Close Encounters. And for the record, let's get this one out of the way. For the record, everyone involved says Spielberg was very faithful to all of Kubrick's ideas, which was the full story. The full story we saw was Kubrick's vision.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah. Like a lot of people think the third act was a Spielberg add-on, but anyway, we can talk more about that. But anyway, Bish Bash Bosh. Actually, before Bish Bash Bosh, some pre-casties. The mother, Monica, Julianne Moore was in the mix.
Oh, yeah.
Gwyneth Paltrow was in the mix. Mm. Jerry Seinfeld was nearly the robot comedian, which was Chris Rock instead.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, we ended up with Haley Joel Osment as David, Frances O'Connor as Monica Swinton, Sam Roberts as Henry Swinton, Jude Law as Gigolo Joe, Jake Thomas as Martin Swinton, William Hurt as Professor Alan Hobby, and Brendan Gleeson as Flesh Air Impresario Lord Johnson Johnson.
What a cast.
Yeah, man. Oh, wait, what's his name was in it too, right? The narrator was Ben Kingsley.
Yeah. There was a couple of voices in there. That were quite interesting, actually.
Yeah. Why wouldn't Teddy be the narrator? That another note for you guys, Kubrick and Spielberg.
Yeah, that's a good call.
Teddy's the fucking man. All right, let's play the trailer.
Yeah.
When's your birthday? I never had a birthday.
His name is David.
I feel it.
That's creepy.
Whoa. Just so real.
In a distant future, in an age of intelligent machines, he is the first robotic child programmed to love and coexist as a member of a family. His is a tale of humanity. And a journey to find his place among humans and machines.
I'm a boy.
You are a real boy. At least as real as I've ever made one.
That's quite a punchy little trailer.
Isn't it?
That didn't give us much. I guess that's it. That's the trailer.
Yeah.
Leave some heavy lifting for poor old Greg, you know, plot synopsis.
Well, I think for my plot synopsis, I'll just start talking, shall I?
Yeah, that's a good way to start.
Okay, so in case you couldn't tell, we're in the future. I'd say like 2030. Nah, I think it's 22nd century, isn't it?
Is it? I can't remember.
Let's call it 100 years' time, shall we?
Yeah.
Nice round-up number.
Yeah.
And the world's gone to shit.
Yeah.
Global warming.
water everywhere.
Ice caps have melted, all those things. So coastal cities are submerged, good ones like Manhattan, underwater.
Yeah.
You know?
I'll be all right, I'm on the first floor.
Yeah, you're good. well, less land.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people have died. And look, the authorities are doing a big job to hold human population levels. Can't have too many people because resources are at an all-time scarcity, you know?
Mm. Yeah.
So you can't just go around having kids. You're not allowed. You need a license, and it's pretty hard to get one. Kids are, you know, they're just part of the plague, you know? Anyway, so if you're lucky and you're rich, you get one. So we meet a couple and they are lucky and rich and they've got their boy, but he's very unwell.
Yeah.
He's in some kind of hyperbaric chamber, it seems.
And he's a dick. Oh.
Well. It doesn't look like he's getting better.
No.
And then you got William Hurt. He's making these fancy robots for people. They call robots mechas, by the way, so they use that terminology. And he's nailed this new state-of-the-art mecha, and it's a little boy. So basically to plug the gap for all these people that can't have a kid, like, well, I've made robot baby. You can just say some dolphin rodeo chestnut and then he'll love you. It's like a fancy dog, Tristan.
Yeah. That's very astute on your part. I only landed on that today, actually. Mm. I got some thoughts on that today. That's good.
Yeah,
that's good.
It's right.
It's accurate. It's astute.
So, you know, if you keep that in mind and play out the scenario of a family member returning home with a puppy unannounced.
Yeah.
This husband, Henry, more on him later. Asshole. He brings home this robot child without telling his wife and then's like, here, I know our son's a bit crook, so here's a replacement android. So, you know, rightly so, she doesn't take this information very well at first.
Yeah.
She's quite angry at Henry, rightly so, and he's like, what? It's like, can tell get back if we don't like him.
Yeah.
Because you've got to, so you basically
very
have
Peter Griffin type of move. Just feels like totally out of touch.
How would you just bring home a robot child that's going to be in your house and looks exactly like a little kid?
Yeah.
Without consultation. Anyway, but his thing is, well, we haven't, it's a bit of a try before you buy. Because what happens is you've got the thing, but once you say, there's like a code you've got to say, you've got to hold the back of his neck with your fingerprint.
And, that's true.
And then say these words in a row when you're sure that you want to keep this android. And then that thing hard codes, is hard coded to loving you. So she ends up letting him hang around, David, Haley Joel Osment's robot baby character, robot boy character. And she's like, you know what? I like this kid.
For some reason.
You know, so she does she says the line of miscellaneous words, the script, and then he becomes even more of a little boy, sort of. His mouth opens, basically. So they've got this thing. They've got this David, and he's kind of like a little boy. And then guess what, Tristan? No sooner has she finished the purple monkey dishwasher words that their other little boy, Martin... Martin comes home. Oh, he's fine now. So, and Martin's a little C-U-N-T.
Oh, shit. We don't want you anymore, Martin. Get the fuck out of here. You're done. You're done.
I would have flicked Martin after a while. So Martin's a nasty kid. Like, we haven't done The Good Son yet, but we've talked about doing it. And I feel like he's like Macaulay Culkin from The Good Son.
Basically.
So he starts...
Although, to be fair, like, if you came home and your parents had already replaced you and you hadn't even died, you'd be like, what the fuck, Mum and Dad?
Yeah. I mean, that's true. That's true.
But it's still a dick. I would have been very accommodating. You got a brother. That would be fun.
Yeah. You can blame him for eating the cookies. Who told you could eat my cookies? So he's just doing some weird shit. He convinces him to go and cut the mum's hair at night
Yeah.
And so I can't remember how he did that. He's like, oh, if you bring me a bit of her hair, then she'll love you or something. He basically realizes that he can trick him into doing things by saying that will make mum love you more, because all he's wired for is her affection, basically.
Exactly.
So this happens and the dad's like, we've got to get rid of him. And she's like, whoa, hang on. Like, we can't just flick the robot child. Kind of got him now, you know, like a COVID puppy.
Get rid of the broken one. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then there's a catalyst. They're at a birthday party. It's incredibly painful scene to watch.
It's hard, man. It's very uncomfortable.
It's really uncomfortable. Yeah. Really uncomfortable. We'll talk more about that later. But there's basically a catalyst scene where he nearly drowns the real boy, because David like clings onto him and they fall in the pool because he's frightened of the other boys. Net, they're like, yeah, he's got to go. So rather than return him and to have him destroyed, the mum character basically drives him off into the wilderness. He's like, okay, run along now, fella.
Yeah.
And she releases him into the woods. And we quickly learn that the setup that they had was pretty swanky, and the rest of the world is a bit of a techno pleasure dome of violence, poverty, and broken robots. Yeah, and then from there, David basically goes on a quest to find the Blue Fairy, because he'd heard about Pinocchio and the Blue Fairy, and he thinks that that's what's going to make him a real boy, and then his mum will love him. So the whole movie is him going off to find the Blue Fairy.
Yeah. Yeah. Finn. And was that all
So I just focused on the beginning.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the first half hour.
And of a 2.5-hour movie. Several more half hours. But was this all like news to you? Had you heard much about the film? Like, was this, you had no idea where this was going?
No, I didn't know what it was about.
So yeah, it was a unexpected wild ride for you?
Yes. It certainly was.
Yeah.
It certainly was.
I think that's what I like about it most, actually, is just that those three acts are so distinct. You're kind of getting three movies, almost like a little trilogy, you know? Mm. Like if it was made today, fuck, actually, that's astute, Tristan. If this was made today, it probably would have been three movies. They would have dragged it out.
Oh, yeah.
It would have come out once. If three Christmases.
Sweet, sweet box office.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, how do we talk about this movie, Greg?
Well, I will start by saying I really liked it.
Good. Okay.
Yeah. Nice. I didn't want to watch it.
Yeah.
In fact, I tried to do a reshuffle earlier in the week.
Yeah. I really want to watch Aliens.
I really want to watch Aliens. Well, it looked dense. It looked dense.
Yeah.
We knew it was going to be dense.
That's why I put 2001 last.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
That is dense. Like a gummy town. But, you know, you're very drawn in very quickly.
Mm.
And I started watching it again last night. I would say the first, and there were a little bit different viewings, I would say.
Oh, yeah.
I'd say the first time I watched it, I was very, I just saw him as a little boy, I think, for pretty much all the movie.
Okay.
Whereas when I started last night, I was like, this kid's a little fucking robot.
Okay, cool. Yeah, so I definitely had the robot version when I watched it.
Did you?
And I was wondering about this, if I'm the robot in that I don't have kids, and so is part of my brain not interpreting it the same way someone with kids might. But I found him very robotic to the point where, I don't want to start this sentence because I'm going to have to, but... It's just going to open a real Pandora's box here, and I don't know where I'm going with it. But I'll just unleash. So I don't not like the movie. I think I like it ultimately because it's making me think, right? And I was engaged the whole time, and it makes you think. That's ultimately a good thing. But just the kid himself, like it feels like a inconsistent thing within the reality of this world, like. This kid is supposed to be the most realistic, loving AI ever made. Yet this one, they decide to not have the ability to blink.
Does he not blink?
He doesn't blink in the whole movie. And this is the other thing too. I remember hearing that at the time, that it was a creative choice. And obviously, Haley Joel Osment is very talented, amazing actor. But the choices made here just feel silly. Like I get... Conceptually, I get, oh, yeah, he's a robot. Let's have him not blink in any scene. That's like a cool actor challenge thing. But Jude Law blinks. Jude Law acts like a human, basically. Aesthetically, he looks a little bit different. Teddy, of course, looks very different, but he acts more like a human too. Yet this motherfucker has the explicit intent of love, is the most robot-y, uncanny valley-ridden of all of them. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't make sense. But then I go, I mean, this is Kubrick and Spielberg. It must be intentional. So I guess they want us to view him as a robot. Like, I don't know. I had no empathy for David the whole movie.
Wow.
I see people talk about dropping him off in the woods as like a real emotional moment. I couldn't give a fuck. I'm like, he's a robot. Like, he doesn't.
What about the kids bullying him and trying to look at his robo willy?
Yeah, I got more of that than him leaving in the park, leaving him in the woods. I just felt like kind of how you said it in the plot synopsis, like it wasn't real love. It was just his programmed mission thing.
But what is love if not a chemical reaction?
Well, and yeah, and if he was acting like a real boy, maybe I would have, you know, gone there a bit more. But again, like they made a choice and these guys make good choices. So there must be a reason for it. But
I felt empathy.
Yeah, I cared more about Teddy. I cared more about Gigolo Joe.
You did?
Like I cared about them. When Gigolo got pulled away, I was like, oh, no, Joe. Oh, yeah, Ara called him a hobot, which was very
astute. Very good.
That was good. That was good from a hobot. Oh, again, Kubrick, Spielberg, you know.
Messed up.
But, yeah, like there was – and why make him so strong and – able to drown children and that sort of shit. But this is something you mentioned as well in the plot synopsis that kind of dawned on me today because I've been thinking a lot about this movie, Greg, because, again, it's uncomfortable. There's things in there that feel inconsistent but at the same time it's made by two fucking geniuses so I feel like they want me to feel that way. They want me to feel like it's inconsistent. So I've just been trying to like, what does it all mean, Greg? And not that this is what it means, but one thing that did help me kind of – grounded a little bit more in my reality is the dog thing because little Seymour over there, he's a little sweetheart. Does he actually love me or he just knows that I feed him? And Ara and I have talked about this a lot as well, like a bit like David in this, we are his whole world, this dog. We go out and he waits for us to come home. We go out and live our lives, do many things, speak to many other people and have all kinds of interactions.
Have all kinds of pastas.
Yeah, he just waits for us.
Sausage ragu.
Sausage ragu, yeah, all of them. All the ragus, all the pastas.
And he's just waiting.
He's just waiting, and I love him. I would be sad to leave him in the woods, and so I guess that was at least the first domino in me feeling some sort of emotion about David, or at least I could empathize with the mum, you know, the emotional struggle there, but I don't know, performance, he's obviously a great actor, I'm not, yeah, but just that choice as a character to have him feel so robotic just makes me not empathize with him as much.
I would say that was intentional because if you didn't pepper that in and make you question it, I think it's about questioning it, right?
Yeah.
So if he just went hard, perfect, little boy, you're like, maybe you wouldn't question it as much.
Yeah, yeah.
But in saying that, I was a lot more empathetic to him than you were by the sounds of it.
And you're a dad, so you've got that, you've activated that part of your brain perhaps.
Maybe, yeah.
Whereas I'm still more of a robot, ironically, in that regard. But then similarly, like I was reading a lot about this movie this week, listened to a couple of podcasts too, and those Blank Check fellas did this one as well. And they were talking about how this is not a happy movie. This is all fucked up shit.
Mm.
But it's just presented in a way where it's like feels sweet. So that's another thing I think I have trouble reconciling in my head a little bit.
But that's like the ending's beauty sad. Of having these two. Yeah, it is a sad ending. Yeah, that is not a happy ending.
Yeah, it's fucked up. It's pretty fucked. He's basically a sociopath, this little robot.
Yeah, it's
– He's –
Yeah.
And I think that's the part I struggled with. I think everyone struggled with. Like a lot of critics have changed their opinion on this film over time. But I think I alluded to this earlier, but a lot of the sentiment was, oh, he's over Spielberged this Kubrick concept. But that was the concept.
Yeah.
People assume that Stanley ended AI with David and Teddy underwater, trapped by the Ferris wheel, and that end credits roll. and they're going to be down there until their batteries run out. That's where they assume Stanley ended it, and I, of course, get criticized for carrying the film 2,000 years into an advanced future where the robots they recreated have replaced us, and super mechas rule the world, and it's become a silicon-based society, no longer a carbon-based society. And they certainly assume that that's how I wrecked Stanley's movie, when in fact, Stanley's treatment, along with Ian Watson, went right into the 2,000-year future. And this was where Stanley was going to take the movie had he lived to direct it. And this is where I was obligated to take the picture. And even if I didn't feel such an obligation to fulfill Stanley's vision, that would have been my vision as well.
And so I think that idea is cool to have something that's actually pretty dark and disturbing, but almost packaged as if it's some sweet fairy tale type of thing. Although fairy tales are always dark and disturbing too. Maybe that's,
Well, that's true. It's very astute on your part.
Yeah.
It's very astute on your part.
So it makes you think.
Again, so you can tell I'm just rambling. I'm still figuring out what I think about this movie. But I think the fact that there is so much to think about is ultimately a sign that it's a good movie.
I think so. If you're thinking about it all week, it's a good sign.
Because we're going to get to 2001 and it's going to be the same thing, man.
Well, exactly. I love that. We'll just be waffling.
Yeah.
Well, there was some things in there as well. I had similar. So, like, if you're designing this thing, why wouldn't you hardwire it to not want to be a real boy?
Yeah. And why not switch off the love if you want to? Like, fuck.
Yeah, or dial it down.
Yeah. Fuck, man. This just seems like choices you could make that are very simple.
And like, why are the parents reading Pinocchio? I know they're reading it to the other son, but still, I think Pinocchio is best left out of that house, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
You got Gruffalo, you got Where the Wild Things Are, Dr. Seuss, take it. There's many.
Little Prince.
There's so many. Little Prince.
It's a banger.
And you go with Pinocchio, a story about a fake little boy that wants to be real.
Yeah.
Just a weird parenting choice.
I felt like the Pinocchio stuff was too on the nose a little as well. Like, oh, so to speak. Oh, God, I really did that, didn't I?
Wow. Keep going.
Yeah, you get all the buttons for that one. That's probably the one I should have used.
Yeah, that's the one, yeah.
yeah, that's pretty good. Like, it felt like it maybe should have been more of a subtext than, like, the text.
Yeah.
Like, there was so much Pinocchio going on.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Again, though, I mean, yeah, I don't know.
And you just didn't take any vulnerability out of it. I would love to get a survey on who were you? Were you drawn in, or were you? Was it a? Are you agree with Tristan here? Have you got any empathy for this sweet little baby robot boy?
But I think it doesn't break the movie if you don't.
I'm just intrigued.
Yeah, yeah, same. Yeah, yeah, it's interesting. And also, I know I just alluded to 2001 as well. Like, that movie is even more ambiguous, I guess, than this one. But I've had a lot more time to sit with that one and, like, reconcile my brain around all these things. Whereas this one, it's like still all the pieces are still like bouncing around my head. So this could be the type of thing where in 2 weeks, 2 years, 2 decades, it all just kind of settles. But right now I'm in the thick of it, man. I'm like that Charlie Day meme with all the things behind, you know, the red strings and shit.
Buddy, I got to dig a little deeper. There's no Pepe Silvia. You got to be kidding me. I got boxes full of Pepe.
So, okay, what about the moral question that they pose at the beginning when William Hurt's there with his junior doctor cohort?
Yeah.
And she said, isn't this about whether a robot can be loved?
That's interesting because I think it's more likely the opposite. I think we're more prone to fall in love than a robot would be. We become emotionally attached to, like, all kinds of shit. Like my dog,
well,
right?
This is,
and my dog doesn't love me as much as I like to think he does, but I love him.
Well, this is, you're correct, Tristan. The big question that they're trying to, if that's the big question, it's kind of already answered because I got to share a little clip with you.
Oh, yeah?
Uh-huh. Maybe when I say I'll share it with you, how about I send it to you?
Okay.
In the chat. So, yeah, basically people already do this. And there's technosexuals. Do you know what a technosexual is?
I can guess.
They yeah, love, people that love, they love robots. Techno music?
Oh.
And techno, probably.
Oh, this is astute. It's called 10 People in Love with Inanimate Objects. Yeah, case closed.
We take a look through 10 people who were once in love with inanimate objects. Number 10, Amanda Whitaker, in love with the Statue of Liberty. Amanda was a 27-year-old shop assistant from Leeds and head over heels in love with the iconic Statue of Liberty. She first fell in love when she saw a picture of it online. In her home, she has a shrine to the famous landmark. "She is my long-distance lover," says Amanda. "I am blown away by how stunning she is." She affectionately refers to the statue as Libby, and although she would like to be married to it, she says she's holding herself back in consideration of the many others who might be in love with it too. Amanda, who also confesses to have been in a passionate love affair with a drum when she was younger, now only has eyes for the Statue of Liberty. Number 9. Amy Wolf, in love with a fairground ride.
Anyway, you get the idea.
Terrible, but accurate. Yeah, this is the thing. Humans are fucked, man. Like, we're just these emotional balls of irrationality and bullshit. So, yeah, I think the opposite is true. We will just fall in love with this shit. Like this little guy over there licking his paw. Isn't that cute? I love him. He just wants me to feed him. Cute. That's all he wants.
And scratch his belly.
I remember watching a thing on the ABC in Australia about pet owners and their dogs and stuff, and the expert was like, "I'm sorry, they don't love you." And it was like pretty upsetting. Yeah.
I care not for these things.
Yeah, yeah. It feels like love. He looks in my eyes, you know.
But dogs get depressed when their owners die.
Yeah, and he laughs when there's some spaghetti hanging out of my mouth. That was the one moment of like bonding in this film. Like, you acted like a fucking psycho. It's not endearing. Oh, I mean, I'm scared of little kids like that in general. We've talked about this.
Well, that's true.
Because you've had this, but obviously you're more mentally prepared. But like, if I woke up in the middle of the night and my 4-year-old kid is just standing there in the dark looking at me, I might hurt him. Like, I'll be fucking scared. I'm in self-preservation mode. I've seen so many scary movies and AI films.
Yeah.
It's going to cut my hair.
La, 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 la.
Exactly. It's fucked up.
I can see Lola standing over me with some scissors.
I could see that. Yeah, I could see that.
Feels very Lola.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, we talked about the ending, right? Actually, let me rewind slightly. I mentioned some critics changed their minds on this film, one of whom was Mr. Roger Ebert.
Ah, the great and powerful. We bear.
Yeah. He initially gave it 3 out of 4 stars and called it wonderful and maddening. For all the kind of reasons that I think we've alluded to in terms of reception at the time and misunderstandings and things. But he eventually gave it 4 stars later and added it to his great movies list in 2011. And I found the 2011 version of his review. I've got a couple of little blurbs here. So what did he say? He said, "Watching it again recently, I became aware of something more. AI is not about humans at all. It's about the dilemma of artificial intelligence. A thinking machine cannot think. All it can do is run programs that may be sophisticated enough to fool us by seeming to think. A computer that passes the Turing test is not thinking. All it's doing is passing the Turing test." He actually threw out, he's very adamant that machines can't think, which, I don't know, it was only 12 years ago. I feel like the world is shifting a little, maybe, that it's possible someday. Anyway, more on that later.
That's interesting.
He also says, "Of course, we must ask in what sense this is in reference to the final act, that final scene with Monica coming back. He says, "Of course, we must ask in what sense Monica is really there." So he spoke to a filmmaker named Jamie Stewart who had a theory. They said, "She's not there at all. It's an illusion merely implanted into David's mind, and the concluding scenes take place entirely within David's point of view. Having downloaded all of David's memories and knowledge, the new mechas have no further use for him, but provide him with a final day of satisfaction before terminating him. At the end, we're told he is dreaming. That is only David's impression. Earlier in the film was established that he could not sleep or therefore dream. So yeah, there are theories that did they even bring her back, or was this just like a thing they tricked him into after they got everything they wanted out of him?
Oh.
But then Ebert also says, well, why would one mecha care if another obtained satisfaction? What meaning is there in giving David 24 hours of bliss? If machines cannot feel, what does the closing sequence really mean? I believe it suggests the new mechas are trying to construct a mecha they can love. They would play mummy to their own Davids, and that mecha will love them. What does love mean in this context? No more, no less than check or mate or pie. That is the fate of artificial intelligence. No mummy will ever love them. So I read a lot there. But that's interesting, right? Like, I didn't really think about that angle at all. Mm. Not just the fact whether it's real or not, but they are obviously studying him. And maybe they're like studying what love is or something, you know? It's kind of interesting.
Mm.
Did you realize they were robots right away, by the way? It took me a moment. I thought they were aliens.
I thought they were aliens at first, yeah.
Yeah. Again, it's obviously a choice to make them look like aliens, so yeah, it's interesting.
Yes.
It's actually really similar to the third act in 2001 as well. So
that's right.
So to think that that wasn't a Kubrickian ending is a little...
Like
it's almost literally the same ending.
Yeah, yeah.
Or at least implied.
Fast depending forward on how heaps of time.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that was a bit of a trip that people wouldn't... It doesn't take a Kubrick expert to recognize that.
Yeah, but I guess I can kind of see where people are coming from though, because like aesthetically and everything, it feels so Spielbergian.
Mm.
But the substance behind it still feels Kubrickian. You know, I was thinking, it reminds me, you know how there's that song, Pumped Up Kicks? And, you know, people sing it because it's real catchy. Oh, the little kids, where they're from.
Yeah.
But it's about school shootings.
Mm.
It's like a similar thing where it's like this, it's presented as this sugar sweet kind of thing, but it's actually really dark and fucked up.
Mm.
So between that and the dog thing, they have been my two kind of, I guess, reference points to make me help process this thing. Yeah.
Really makes you think.
It really does.
I wonder where... So it is an interesting one to watch first, because we're going to have it in the back of our minds as we go through these other films.
Well, yeah, I take comfort in that, because I think by the time we get to the end of this in like 8 weeks,
mm.
I'll have had enough time to reflect on this. And when we think about what our favorite ones were, I think the dust will have settled, hopefully, and I'll have some clarity.
Yeah. Whereas have we done it later? Because my initial thought was this is very existential treatment. Thought-provoking treatment of artificial intelligence. Do we need more time with the subject matter before we watch this? But having it up front and then reflecting on it, is better, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I like the miniseries allow us to do that, right? Because usually it's just on to the next and you forget. Some of the movies I forget we've even done.
Oh, yeah.
But having a miniseries to really like – think about a bigger picture here. It's quite nice. Actually, speaking of Greg, we've got to hit some tropes, although they're not quite tropes in this case. Maybe they'll build over time too, but I've got a few little categories here. And again, they're less tropes, but more, I guess, themes or evaluation points of how this film has addressed AI and as a result, I guess, the future as well. So first up, depictions of the future. You know, have they gone brutalism, cyberpunk, neo-noir? This one had a lot of neon. I don't know what you call that. Is that cyberpunk?
I don't know. What does cyberpunk mean?
I think it just means like lots of techno-y machinery looking. I think Blade Runner is kind of cyberpunk, I think, right?
Yeah.
With noir. So I guess it's probably closer to that neck of the woods, which I enjoy. I do enjoy.
Yeah.
It
was a nice juxtaposition to the serene act one.
Yeah, you're right. Because, again, you went in blind, right? And I had seen this before. I didn't really consider that, how much of a jolt, like how much of a shift that is to go from that serene house into the chaotic Rouge City.
Yeah.
Human extinction. Have the humans been wiped out or the AI taken over the world? Well, at first, no, but eventually, yes.
Yes.
But not through ill will, I suppose.
And it felt like they must have, I think, what were they called? The fairs? The flash fair or something?
Oh, where they blow up the robots and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that obviously there must have been a tipping point where robots were about to take over because people seem to hate the robots.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking that when you said we were talking about population control and less land mass, et cetera, and you're building these things that don't die, you're going to hit a tipping point, yeah, where there's too many of these things hanging around.
Well, there would be a bit, you know what else there would be a lot of?
They took our jobs.
Yeah, big time. Yeah, absolutely. And actually, speaking of, I thought another interesting one is robots bad or humans bad or both? The robots weren't really bad in this. David was essentially a sociopath, but that's not necessarily evil, I guess. The humans are probably worse, I guess. Yeah, this one's a little more ambiguous. I think we'll have some more clean-cut examples down the line. I think the big question, though, Greg, does this film build the case for AI love? And I would say no.
Oh, I would say yes.
It does? Okay, interesting.
Yeah, because I think the mum loved him.
Oh, sorry, I meant can an AI love a human?
Oh, Tristan, we can't answer that until we know what is love.
Okay, that's interesting.
So I thought, who better to explain what is love than the ladies' man himself, Leon Phelps?
What's happening? You got the ladies' man, Leon Phelps here. And I am looking at a half-empty bottle of Cavassier, which means that we are just about out of time. But before I go, I'd like to leave you with just one more thought. This is a little something that I wrote. And I read, what is love? What is this longing in our hearts for togetherness? Is it not the sweetest flower? Does not this flower of love have the fragrant aroma of fine, fine diamond? Does not the wind love the dirt? Is not love not unlike the unlikely knot it is unlikened to? Are you with someone tonight? Do not question your love. Take your lover by the hand. Release the power within yourself. You heard me, release the power. Tame the wild cosmos with a whisper. Conquer heaven with one intimate caress. That's right, don't be shy. Whip out everything you got and do it in the butt. By Leon Phelps.
Well, I think that really helps you navigate that question.
Yeah, you sold me, Greg. This film absolutely, yeah. No, I think you kind of said this too, right? When you started watching it again, your point of view changed a little bit, right? You're like, oh, this kid's a robot. Because that's kind of how I saw it the whole way through. And so he thinks he loves, but he's been programmed to do that. And the way he then pursues acting on his love is at the expense of all else, which tells me it's just a mission he's been programmed to do. And then once he has his moment with his mum later, it's like, mission accomplished. I can die now or whatever happens.
Yeah. Look, ultimately, I think you're right.
But I guess I think it is one of those things you can see. I mean, it's probably open to interpretation, right?
Yeah. I think companionship. I'm sure in the future that people will have robot companions.
And actually,
they kind of already do.
True. And actually, to my earlier point of saying I felt more connection with Gigolo Joe and such, I think his character is almost more proof of love. The way he helps David, he didn't have to help him. Like, that's love. That shows that it's capable of, like, affection and love and caring more than David.
Yeah,
he's just an obsessed
fucking
psycho.
He was underrated, wasn't he?
Yeah. We haven't talked much about him. He was great.
He was great in this.
Yeah. He was awesome.
a robot gigolo.
It's a good idea. It makes sense. As if that wouldn't be one of the first things you do once you make robots.
100%.
The porn industry has been behind almost every digital innovation, or at least a fast early adopter of all of them.
Yeah.
I remember someone talking about this at work once, like even VHS even, and then DVDs, and then like animated ads on the internet, and I think now VR, like all of these things. Porn is at the forefront, man.
Yeah.
So it makes sense. Internet. The fucking internet in general.
Yeah.
Yeah.
90% porn as far as I can tell.
Yeah, right? 10% some other bullshit.
Yeah. 10% Wikipedia.
Yeah, yeah.
That's your browsing history.
Yeah. Oh, Greg, I mentioned the full circle moment of David finally having that 24 hours with his mother. It's a perfect closed loop. He feels the satisfaction, mission accomplished, and dozes off to sleep for the first time and likely the last time. But I put it to you, Greg.
Yes, yes.
There's another full circle moment. There's another full circle moment because eagle-eyed friends of the show will have noticed that Sir Vincent Chase is also in this film.
Yeah.
Adrian Grenier's in there. And Haley Joel Osment is in the Entourage film.
He is.
There you go.
Wow.
They must be buddies.
I guess so.
Vinny Chase is just on his way to Pleasure Town.
Vin's doing the movie.
Vin's doing the movie.
I yelled that at my television when he came on.
Yeah, it was his big break. and then Haley Joel Osment's awesome in Entourage.
We should talk about this. He's great because he aged very differently to what you would expect, but he's actually fucking awesome. There was when I first realized was – it's a while ago now, maybe like 10 years ago, fuck. There was like a season promo for Always Sunny in Philadelphia, but they had all different actors playing them and he was playing Mac.
Yeah.
And he was great.
He's super talented.
He's super charismatic and just not a cute boy anymore, but just a great, that guy. Like he could be a Mac type person for sure. He hasn't been utilized well yet.
I think he will. I think.
Because he's great. He's obviously a great actor.
He's been working. He's been doing stuff. But I would suspect he's got a fair bit more in the tank for that career. Yeah, I think it just as you said, he looks different, but that just means he can have a whole different second career.
Yeah, well, it's almost like he might do better if he wasn't that kid, because we wouldn't have that in our heads.
Once he fully separates from that.
Yeah.
Child character or child actor, he'll go again. But he's doing heaps of stuff, by the way. I had a quick look.
Yeah, yeah. I've seen him in a few things and now I can't remember any of them. But he's always been a highlight, like Entourage, because that movie was a stinker, but he was great.
So was that just the movie where he plays like the rich financiers?
Yeah.
Rich Texan. Is it Billy Bob Thornton?
I think so, yeah. That movie was like 10 years too late. I used to love that show.
Yeah, but then I didn't.
But we definitely grew apart.
oh, man. Didn't we just?
Yeah. Yeah.
When it came out, it was everything. It was like probably the last show that I co-viewed with mates where you'd go over to someone's house on a Monday night.
And rewatch. We'll just put it on. Me and my roommates. Yeah. I think I got DVDs from work or something. And we would just constantly put it on, like just start from the beginning once we finish. We were obsessed.
Sweet fantasy it was.
It really was.
I'm not turtle. But then at the end everyone's like, I'll be turtle.
Yeah. Oh, the writing was so bad on that show because
but Turtle's whole story.
Yeah. Yeah. But they had to like write it to make sense for the cameos versus making any sense for the show. Like it was just, insane.
Yeah.
Anyway. But, it served its purpose. I loved it then. So I guess, I can't shit on it. I loved it.
It has its place.
Yeah. Should we get into the verdict?
Yeah.
I don't know what to say, really.
I don't remember asking you a goddamn thing.
I am the law.
I'd like an answer to the question, Judge.
I want to have them answered immediately.
You can't handle the truth.
What are you waiting for, huh?
Say what again? Say what again? I dare you.
Nothing further,
Your Honor.
And that's all I have to say about that.
This is a funny one because a lot of our evaluation criteria here, I mean, does anything fundamentally not hold up? I don't think so. FX test, hell yeah, it passes. But then everything else is kind of a no, right? Like Bechdel test is a no. Race Bechdel is a no. Did Simpsons do it? I don't think so.
They've done like iRobot or something, haven't they?
Yeah, and it's so hard to search for this movie now because of AI being everything.
Yeah,
so,
it really is.
So I can't search Simpsons AI because, you know, what the fuck is that going to show me? Same goes for porn parody. But I think that's kind of the point of this movie though too. Well, not the point of the movie, but the crux of this film's position in culture is that it is kind of overlooked. But it's definitely worth revisiting, I would say.
100%.
Sounds like you'd be in agreement. Yeah. Like, I think I'll watch it again.
100%. I will watch this movie again.
Probably soon. I nearly watched it again last night, but my brain was too sore.
I tried to get Carol to watch. I think I sent you a photo. I was trying to get her to watch it with me last night.
Yeah, I didn't realize at the time really that was it. You were starting it again. I thought maybe you were still finishing it. But, yeah, respect. You
no, I finished it, yeah.
Yeah, nice.
But, the second viewing, I was watching it going, oh, he looks heaps more like a robot this time. It was weird.
Yeah, interesting. Interesting.
So that I think I will have a different viewing experience.
Yeah, maybe that's why I had more of that reaction in this watch because I had seen it before. What happens in the third watch? I guess we'll find out.
Yeah, it's definitely a rewatch though.
But yeah, all in all, I think the fact that there's so much to talk about and play with and like puzzle pieces to think about, and that's the shit that I do enjoy. So I guess whether or not I totally have come to grips with everything, I would say that makes it a good movie. And definitely worth a revisit.
Absolutely. Yeah. Do you know what's interesting? We seem to have a very good grasp as storytellers on how this whole scenario is going to play out.
Yeah.
And yet we're just chipping away towards it.
That's the thing, right? Like even Elon Musk says things like, I guess probably going to
pens down for 6 months and try and put some governance around this.
The analogy he used when I saw him talk about it was it's like if you're building a highway and there's an ant's nest on it. You don't hate the ants and you're not evil, but you're going to have to get rid of the ant's nest to build your highway. Like that's how AI may look at humans eventually.
Yeah.
Which, you know, well, that's the other trope we could potentially look at as well actually is, you know, because you could objectively look at humans and go, well, they're killing the earth. Humans are the problem. We need to get rid of them.
Yeah.
Like that's a pretty common AI kind of trope, right?
Mm-hmm.
So maybe we'll add that to the list. Oh, MVP Teddy, by the way.
Oh, I'm giving it to Robo Boy and Jude. They were both amazing.
Yeah, everyone was great. Great performances all around.
I would have liked, do you know what? Sorry, kind of out of sequence.
That's all right.
I would have liked more William Hurt in it.
Yeah.
Because he's like the whole guy behind this. And then they showed that he'd lost a son and he'd kind of just remade his son as the robot boy.
Yeah, yeah.
That's kind of skimmed over a bit.
That's the thing. I know I kind of made fun of it before that if it was made today, it would be a trilogy. But there is room to dive into all of these things a bit more, right? A TV
Netflix,
show maybe.
Listening.
Yeah, because then the good thing about the episode format is you can have one of those episodes that's like just a complete side story. So it could just be all about the dad. Yeah. That would be interesting.
No more rules.
Yeah, yeah. Doesn't have to be as linear. But it exists and it's still good. It doesn't need to be remade.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, that's a good point. Good point. William Hurt, for the longest time I thought William Hurt was in Game of Thrones and then I realized it was just a guy that looks like William Hurt.
Yeah. There you go.
I'll send you a picture because I can't be the only one. If I Google William Hurt Game of Thrones, oh no, that's from Robin Hood. That is William Hurt. Okay, whatever. Yeah, well, other people agree with me, Greg. It's a thing.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm not challenging you. All right, what else have we got? Are we still talking? Bechdel test. Do two robots have a conversation about something that's not a human?
Oh, robot Bechdel test.
Yeah.
Do they, though, have a conversation? Do they talk about something that's not human? They talk about the mum, right?
Yeah. I don't think they do.
We're doing The Matrix next week, Greg.
Are we?
Yeah, The Lost Tapes. Oh. I might have to resurface some of those clips.
You got to. So, oh my God.
Some of our OG friends of the show will know because we've referenced before, but before we released these podcasts, we practiced with The Matrix and something else. And they were real stinkers, but maybe we'll be
blind.
Absolutely, we were. We had to drink like 10 beers to have the confidence to do a podcast then.
Yeah.
Down to 9 now.
10 beers to be confident enough to have a conversation with each other. Yeah.
But with microphones, Greg, it's very intimidating.
Yeah, true.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll see you next week, gang.
The Matrix.
Yeah.
Thanks for hanging around for the first episode of The Distant Future. The Distant Future.
The humans are dead.
I would definitely put AI high on the list just because it's such a luxury when you're working on a Steven Spielberg movie because you have all this time for preparation. We were out at his house in the Hamptons. Me and Jude were rehearsing with Steven and, you know, doing laps around his pool trying to get the robot walks in sync and everything. And I learned to scuba dive before we shot that movie. And then the entire process was like over a year that you get to spend with this character and this team. And it's just, I learned so much on that project. And it's really great to work on such a giant production sometimes.